Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Day of December 2015. This is the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. Among other things, that's the home of the Horn chat room, which is free and, in some instances, easy to use. It's kind of a booger for people who try to run Java on things like Apple products, but everybody else seems to be okay, I think, sort of, kind of. Just head on over to HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, click on chat room, pick yourself out a screen name, and a password, and jump right in where you will be met by Anatole and King of Cups and Texas Tea and Truth Seeker and longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderators Lottie and Sparky. And you'll be part of the real-time multimedia extravaganza that is Horn Chat. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. And, of course, over at headonradionetwork.com/contribute, well, that's how we keep this all going. That's how we keep this on the air. That's how we keep the packets passing and the electrons happily buzzing around the protons and neutrons and what have you. Yes. Yes. We try to raise $200 per evening, and that leaves us this evening with a fundraising goal of about $275. And I'm told I'm not on again. Damn. I'm on now. Okay. Good. I would like, yeah, it's very nice not to have two nights in a row of that. It's rather, well, it frazzles one's tiny little brain a bit, it does. So anyway, I need to raise about $275 this evening, which would be wonderful. It would be great if we got that out of the way early. And toward that end, it's that time of year. Yes, it is. It is that time of year. We have a note from Paul from Parts Unknown. Mm-hmm. This landed in the my email about 6 hours ago, and I knew it was Christmas. Dear Bob, I'm gearing up for my annual Palmond Challenge. That's what we call them, Palmonds. And dang, ain't they yummy, because they are. I'm gearing up for my annual Palmond Challenge. I'm donating the same amount of almonds I make every year, but I'm making far less in total than I usually do. Due to the drought that is just happening for no reason in California, global climate change has nothing to do with it. Ixnay on the Obel Glay Imet Clay Ainge Che. Haven't we been over this? It's a fraud. It's a hoax. It's not real. I mean, after all, a real live, honest-to-Jesus senator from the state of Oklahoma carried a snowball into the Senate last winter in January, thus proving that global warming is a great big hoax. Yeah, I added that part. Almond prices have increased by nearly 50%. After the wedding and a family trip, we are fairly broke, says Paul from Parts Unknown. Congratulations just the same on the wedding and the family trip. Despite that, Paul continues, I'm putting out the Palmond Challenge for the year. I'm offering three tins, and these are big tins. These are not little piddling tins. These are big tins. And I tell you what, to set it out on the snack table before a holiday meal or or just for a family get-together or something, they disappear. It's like some sort of science fiction effect. It's just, they're gone because everybody loves them. I'm putting out the Paulman Challenge for the year. I'm offering three tins as a reward for contributions of $40 or more to the horn. This is the normal offer I make every year, so it is more of a bargain than usual given the price increase of almonds. Each tin has roughly 1.5 pounds of almonds. These almonds are skinned by hand, roasted in sea salt and organic extra virgin olive oil, and shipped to you in a very nice holiday seasonal tin. They are vegan, gluten-free, and taste wonderful. They absolutely do. I'm currently working on making them. I plan to mail them off next Wednesday, December 23rd. So from now until next Tuesday, I'm offering up three tins for giving $40 or more to the horn. Just email Bob and let him know you want the Paulmans along with your address, and Bob will forward them to me. Then you can enjoy some tasty treats for your New Year celebrations. And now, courtesy of Paul from Parts Unknown, a rant. Paul says, I just need to vent. And being that this is Thorn in the Side Thursday, and I think these qualify as personal thorns, so this fits rather nicely. Paul writes, I finally lost my cool last night watching the highlights of the Republican debate this week. I suddenly realized what bullshit this whole political system is. It happened when I heard about a poll that's been out there this week that Americans are as concerned slash afraid of terror attacks in the U.S. as they were since just after the 9/11 attacks. My response to this is, what the... These are not people flying planes into buildings, sneaking in low-grade weapons of mass destruction like dirty bombs or anthrax into the country and setting them off. They're afraid of people coming to the country with some cash and purchasing a whole lot of guns legally and causing a mass shooting. While I would completely understand people losing their shit over a gun massacre in France, where they don't allow guns, but in America, there's been a mass shooting an average of once a day in 2015, and we haven't freaked out until just recently. The ISIS-backed attack in San Bernardino makes up roughly 0.3% of the mass shootings this year. That's 0.3%. Yes. So why are we suddenly so afraid, Paul asks. Well, the simple answer is that this last shooting was an act of terror, and it was those people that did it. However, I think the answer is a little more subtle than that. I believe that the Tea Party crowd is a loud enough plurality that when they want something, attention is paid to them. They might not get it, but it is at least recognized. I think you're onto something there, Paul. Why is the Tea Party so freaked out about this most recent mass shooting, as opposed to the other mass shootings? Well, why it is that it could happen to them. The stereotypical Tea Partier would never attend a black church, so no reason to fear Dylann Roof. They homeschool their children, so they aren't afraid of an Adam Lanza shooting up a school. They don't get abortions, so they aren't afraid of Robert Deere shooting up a Planned Parenthood. However, when they can potentially get shot by just walking down the street or going to a company Christmas party, a Tea Partier wouldn't attend a holiday or winter party. Well, since it is the season, let me quote from a Christmas movie that I am sure Tea Partiers watch. Welcome to the party, pal. From Die Hard 1. I'm so tired of people only talking about things when the Tea Party gets riled up. They are a minority of America. There are currently 38 members of the Freedom Caucus in the House, while there are currently 65 in the Progressive Caucus. Think about that. The Freedom Caucus can get John Boehner fired and shut down the government. The Progressive Caucus are considered outsiders and can't seem to get a seat at the table. Did card check even make it to the House floor when the Democratic Party had the majority from 2006 to 2010 and the Progressive Caucus had more than 80 members? Why do progressives have to have such overwhelming numbers to get anything done in government? The California state government had to get more than a two-thirds majority of Democrats in the state House and Senate before they could pass common-sense legislation that fixed their state budget by raising taxes and cutting spending. I think the progressive wing of the Democratic Party need to start getting loud and angry. I'm tired of having bigger numbers than any other caucus and getting treated like we don't matter in the grand scheme of things. While I support Senator Sanders, it is more likely that Senator Clinton will win the nomination. If she does, here's her political calculus. What is the minimum I have to do progressively to get progressives to turn out to vote for me in the election? We need to get loud and raise that bar, or we're just a bunch of gullible retards, to paraphrase Rahm Emanuel. To sum up, Bob, you keep saying that I Want a Pony is not on the ballot, and you're going to hold your nose and vote for Clinton in November if that's what it comes to. I would argue that the Tea Party is going to get their pony, whether it is Trump, Cruz, or whoever ends up getting the nomination. While it could be debated that an actual pony would make a better candidate than any of the Republicans in the lead right now, basically, we aren't going to get anything we want in this country unless we get loud and demand it. And more importantly, hold something back that they want, like our support. Get out there, progressives. Threaten primaries. Shake the system. Make them pay attention to us. We have the numbers. We're just too polite. The future of the human race is at stake. Get angry. It is obscene that Donald Trump's media coverage is 84 times that of Bernie Sanders. Think where Bernie Sanders would be in the polls if he got a more realistic share of mainstream media coverage. Nothing will change for us unless we take a page out of the movie Network. I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore. Hell. It seems to be working for the Tea Party. And there's a lot of truth in that. The fact of the matter is, and I've seen it personally in a couple of areas. For some reason or another, our side remains almost perpetually in reaction mode. We don't punch; we wait for an opportunity to counterpunch. When in dealing with the likes of a Tea Party, you've got to bloody their noses first. And we haven't. We haven't even tried. How about, really, how about some serious pushback legislation? They want to close the borders? How about antithetical legislation? They want to arm Syrian rebels? How about some peace legislation? One of the more gallingly particular examples is the fact that, guess what? The oil export ban that we've had since the Saudis fucked us the first time, it's gone now. The president, not sure, will be signing off on an end to the banning of exports of domestically produced crude oil. Now, you might recall that was for the purpose of what was the phrase?
Energy independence.
Because we can't be dependent upon that foreign oil no more. We got to build up our market oil industry and be able to produce our own oil, so we're going to have to be bowing and scraping to them people, what kisses each other's men's on right on the mouth and goes a walking hand in hand through the bluebells. We got to be energy independent, I tell you. No more. In the budget deal to be signed by President Obama, yes, yes, yes. We've got the teabaggers that control the government. See Paul from Parts Unknown's note. The teabaggers who control the government have gone full Larry, Darryl, and Daryl and have adopted as their common motto, anything for a buck. Now, if it is so goddamned important that we drill out and blast out and frack out the Bakken crude and send it hurtling across the country on bomb trains, one would think it equally important that we refine it here and put it back in our gas tanks. But no. See, that's the thing. We've got to end the export ban because we don't need it here. We don't need the goddamn Bakken crude any more than we needed or we're going to get the tar sands crude. No, this needs to go on the export market. We're burning less coal in coal-fired power plants, right? Yeah, sure. So what are we doing? Are we mining less coal? Marginally, maybe, not really. No, we're putting it on trucks and then putting it on trains and putting it on barges and sending it to terminals where we put it on boats, and the boats go across the sea. They go down the eastern seaboard. They hang a right at Florida. They go through the Panama Canal and bang, China. Or they just hang out off of Norfolk, Virginia. Hi, Nancy. And head across the Atlantic, maybe docking in, say, Antwerp, or Amsterdam, or I don't, because the Netherlands burns more mountaintop removal coal than any other country in Europe. Or maybe it goes to India. A lot of our coal from this county goes to India, or maybe it goes to Russia. Sure, why not? Mm-hmm. So they've just put they've lifted the export ban on oil. If we had a noisy progressive caucus, we could easily have put forward a bill imposing an export ban on coal. If these progressive legislators actually believe what it is they preach, that the burning of coal is the killing of the species, our species, you know, us, to wit, humans, then an export ban on American coal would be a natural. Have you heard of it being introduced? You haven't? Yeah, that's because it hasn't. That's because we're in constant response mode. Now, the birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, booger eaters, those people file a bill a day. It doesn't matter how crazy it is. It goes in the hopper. They throw it against the wall. If they stick, then no telling what might happen. You see how this works. The teabaggers have a shotgun blast approach, whereas we have apparently a rope-a-dope approach. Paul really got me going with that note. Thank you. Thank you, Paul, from Parts Unknown. And thank you for, once again, the annual holiday season Paulman Challenge. The first 10 of Paulmans is gone. It will be going to Carol Baker, Queen of the Minions. And I'm not kidding, Carol. You're going to love these. They're a delight. I mean, they got just a little roasty toasty to them. The salt, the olive oil. Oh, yes. Yes, indeed. Carol noting in regard to the baggers and Paul from Parts Unknown's note. The baggers get attention for the same reason a screaming baby gets attention. We acknowledge them to make them stop. They may or may not have shit themselves, but mostly they just want attention. I think that's true in large part. But beyond wanting attention, they want control of the government because their ultimate goal is to destroy civil self-governance. They are far more so than anybody who ever hung out in Zuccotti Park, far more so than any black blockers who ever put a rock through a plate glass window at a GATT summit or whatever, or, you know, put a postal mailbox on top of a Volkswagen Beetle, or, you know, power of the people, man. Here. No, the baggers are anarchists. Absolute anarchists. They want an anarchy of complete and total corporate chaos, and the only way they can accomplish that is by dismantling constitutional self-governance, which is, in fact, their goal. Mm-hmm. Randy pointing out via email, but Bob, which is not gimmick infringement, Ron. Okay, it's not. But Bob, that may be a new gimmick in its own, and this one belongs to Randy. But Bob, in order to punch first, you would have to have a brain that was conniving all the time like a pig licking. Not so much, Randy. You just, to be the one who punches first, you have to identify problems first. You can't wait for the other side to just be the problem. I mean, look at the budget deal that's being hailed, I guess, if hailed is the right word. Oh, there's all kinds of good fun inside the budget deal. Supposedly, it's a big win for our side because Christopher W. Hansen, president of the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network, said, this is huge. We're going to have a lot of people who will survive because of this. Because imagine this, the repiglicans, the birthers, deathers, tenthers, birchers, bagger eaters, booger eaters, baggers, whatever, they deigned to cooperate and fund $2 billion for the National Institutes of Health. Never mind the fact that it is as much a benefit to their constituents as it is to any progressive constituent to be able to have effective medical research. That's a win for our side. Just getting something that is normal and makes sense and keeps the something that's good going forward. Yay, we win. Ain't that pitiful? Meanwhile, on the other hand, there are sweetheart deals inside the budget compromise for, car racetrack owners, investors in timberlands, which means people who cut down forests as opposed to people who see them grow or make them grow. I'm all right with this. There are, I guess, tax breaks for cider makers. Yum, cider. See, I can compromise my values like that. Cider. She blinded me with cider. See what I mean? I'm pitiful. I really am. Meanwhile, we get a win in the form of the National Institutes of Health continuing to exist. Yay! And there was much rejoicing. What do they call a win over on the repiglicking side? Well, they get to gut a key provision of the Affordable Care Act. That's one of their wins. Mm-hmm. The ability of the government to provide subsidies to struggling insurance companies. I know, corporate welfare, but it's part of the way the thing is supposed to work. That's gone, or almost entirely gone, with almost no fanfare whatsoever. And this was something that Marco Polo Rubio shepherded through, not with a lot of noise, but there it is. I guess that's how Washington works. And we get, to keep researching diseases, which is good for the whole country, and they get to try to kill the Affordable Care Act with 1,000 cuts instead of one big hissy. Mm-hmm. The Democrats and Republicans alike move to delay the implementation of the Cadillac plan health care tax, among other people cited by the New York Times. Representative Joe Courtney, a Democrat from Connecticut, said he hopes to see the tax entirely repealed. Apparently, it will increase the deficit, right? But remember, Count Dekula told us deficits don't matter. From 2018 to 2025, the Congressional Budget Office figured that the Cadillac tax would raise $87 billion, and implementing it's going to cost about $18 billion. And again, by the way, reauthorizing the National Institutes of Health, you know how much that was? $2 billion. $2 billion. Now, let's not make any mistake. Let's be clear about this. The AFL-CIO is very happy that the Cadillac tax is being delayed. Mm-hmm. For good reasons. The tax on medical devices is being suspended for 2 years. Yeah. And then there's what Rubio did. Stringent limits on federal payments to insurers that lose money in health insurance marketplaces under the health law. See, that's the thing. It's never going to be profitable to, and I'm speaking from where I am. It's never going to be profitable to insure the hillbillies. Because we're a sick and poisoned place where even working for a living will quite often shatter your body. Because all we're good for is heavy labor. We're not much good for that thinking work. And so just about any insurance company that does business in West Virginia is going to struggle to survive. Because we're all sick. We're all broken to one degree or another. We don't have that many young people. We've got a predominantly middle-aged to aged population. I think we've got the second highest percentage of senior citizens of any state, save Florida. You don't even want to think about being, apparently being old in Florida can be pleasant. You don't want to be old in West Virginia. You don't. You just don't. So, hollering that the risk corridor payments were a bailout for insurers. Well, those insurers are now more likely to go belly up, which will in turn leave more people lacking access to health insurance in places that are already particularly fragile in the first place, like West Virginia, like Mississippi, Stan, like Alabama. You get the idea? Mm-hmm. Of course, Mississippi Stan and Alabama and South Carolina Stan, none of those even have the Medicaid expansion to fall back on. But by golly, we win. We get to keep the National Institutes of Health and keep the barbarians from tearing it all the way down to the damn ground. Well, I tell you what, much more winning like that and Pyrrhic victories at best, I suppose. Yeah. Randy asks, I don't get it. Why was there talk of a government shutdown? I thought that Speaker Boehner took care of that so that the new speaker would have a clean slate. Not quite. No, he just kicked the can down the road. And this still had to be done. He just got to come into office without it looming like a sword of Damocles immediately over his little old punkin' haid. Yep. Tin number two of the Paulmans is now gone. Wow. Enjoy them, Bob, down in Texas, and I know you will. One to go. Meanwhile, a note from Steve in New York. Subject line, our win. So, fiscal year 2016 military spending is $585 billion. Medical research you just mentioned is $2 billion. Note, graphically, health doesn't even register on a graph next to the military-industrial congressional complex budget. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, and by the way, just for the fun of considering it, the budget overall as passed is $1.1 trillion. So, fully 50% of that is military entitlement spending. Yeah. Imagine that. We are spending half, more than half, of our budget on stuff to kill other people, whereas we spend $2 billion out of $1.1 trillion on efforts to keep them alive. Hmm? Did you notice, and I didn't leave anything out, did you notice in going through that story that there was nothing in there about, children needing to eat food? There was nothing in there about an expansion of supplemental nutrition assistance program benefits, was there? No, because then they'd be calling Barack Obama the food stamp president again. Mm-hmm. Did you notice there wasn't a lot of talk in there about? Wasn't a lot of talk in there at all about, say, our, and you have to say it this way now, our crumbling infrastructure? Crumbling? You have to say crumbling in front of infrastructure now, mainly because it is. Yeah. Nope. Progressives can just be happy, damn it. That we get to keep the National Institutes of Health and don't be pissing and moaning, or they'll take that away from us too. Maybe beat us with it. See how it works? Yeah. So yeah, there's plenty of stuff to work with on this thorn in the side Thursday. Thank you, Robert in Australia, letting me know loud and clear in Sydney. Good. I got a little more earlier. I got a little more lesson. Another lesson in speaking strong. Is that how you do it? Am I getting close, Robert? Strine? Bondi, which I pronounce Bondi, isn't. It is Bondi. And you run the two words together when you say it. Robert notes, don't feel bad, Bob. Here in Australia, pronouncing most American place names properly is easy for us because most Australians grow up hearing them said on American TV shows. So in that respect, we have an unfair advantage. It's also why there are so many Australian actors in the U.S. They all grew up listening to all the different American accents. But, of course, in that regard, we do not count Mel Gibson as an Australian. I know you don't count him as an Australian. He was an American who was shipped to Australia by his weird-ass anti-Semitic daddy to avoid the Vietnam War. And then while down there, became an actor, etc., yada, whatever. Pretty sure y'all don't claim him. It's the Jews, I tell you. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, a note from Steve in China. I couldn't get over the Franklin Graham freak show segment last night. Isn't a Franklin Graham the latest cracker from the good elves at Keebler? Coal-flavored. Well, saloon, whorehouse, church. And the only reason to have the church in the first place, got to plant the faithful dead somewhere. But it's the man of God has your ass. Sunlight bright walking in, dirt covered carrying out. Of course, there's always a choice, Faulkner and Steinbeck or liquor. Sometimes both. Common horse sense, though, especially to the cotton and sugarcane planters who are a mere generation past in my own South Carolina roots. Our collective problem, politically or otherwise, we're too sophisticated to admit our ignorance, whereas the ignorant, they're just a brick. You guys never cease to amaze me. A lot of brilliance in the Horn Family Commune congregation. In regard to the crude oil export ban being eliminated, Jack in Shreveport says, dumbasses that are willing to do anything, no matter how bad it is for the country, that will shovel more money into the hands of their oil and gas masters, want to end the crude oil export ban, using the right-wing lie about how many jobs, that's JAWWBBBBBBBZZZZZZZZZZZ, jobs, will be created. Republicans want to ship more of the U.S. raw materials out of the country to have value added somewhere else for the profit of big oil. I'm sure there are plenty of Dems in favor as well. And, of course, there's the additional damage of crude oil spills on land and in the ocean. Jack says, God damn it, I'm so fucking sick and tired of such obviously bad crap just flying through Congress and the sheeple falling for the same fucking lies they're told that will benefit them. I sure haven't had my life battered by more fracking and natural gas supplies, and nothing will get any better for average people due to this ban ending. Another fucking step toward the U.S. becoming more of a third world country. Well, at this point, more is a relative term, Jack. In many senses, we're already there. Really, we are. I just happened to run across something over on the Facebook earlier today, and I found it quite informative, and also, too, quite horrifying. The story's a day old. It comes from Huffington Post. Laura Bassett is the writer, the reporter. It turns out that the United Nations sent three women who lead the Working Group on Discrimination Against Women to the United States. You know, we used to think that I was thinking back to our Franklin Graham experience last night. Delicious with peanut butter, Franklin Graham's. Yeah. Remember how I said that Islam is incompatible with American values because our Constitution and how they treat women? Remember that? Yeah, Frank, I guess it's a constitution that exists only in Frank's brain, and all the women are happy because they're silent in church. And they're above average, right? It's been a bitter week in Mount Colby gone. No, the United Nations sent the leaders of their working group on discrimination against women. That would be human rights experts from Poland, the United Kingdom, and Costa Rica. They sent them on a 10-day tour this past month of the United States. The three women, I don't know if they split up to do this or if they did it as a team, they visited Alabama, Texas, and Oregon to see what the state of women's rights is in the United States of America,
the greatest country in the world on earth now, today, forever, amen, indivisible, under God.
Yes. And the report is not good. Not that you would expect it to be. So, Jack, more of a third world country? I don't know. I don't know how you use the comparative in that sense. Because as Laura Bassett writes at Huffington Post, the delegates were appalled by the lack of gender equality in the United States. They found the U.S. to be lagging far behind, not just lagging behind, but lagging far behind international human rights standards in a number of areas, including the 23% gender pay gap, maternity leave, affordable child care, and the treatment of female migrants in detention centers. Hello, prison industrial complex. Who helped invent you, Mr. Prison Industrial Complex? Why, I'm proud to say I was largely invented by William Jefferson Clinton. How about that, Mr. Prison Industrial Complex? I know. The era of big government is over. Fuckwit. Sorry. So, what did they have to say? Well, in one instance, the women visited an abortion clinic down in Talabama. They said that it was the most telling moment of the entire trip. Francis Radde, the delegate from the UK, said, "We were harassed. There were two vigilante men waiting to insult us. The men repeatedly shouted, 'You're murdering children!' as soon as they neared the clinic, even though Ms. Radde said they are clearly past childbearing age." Eleonora Zielinska, a delegate from Poland, said, "It's a kind of terrorism." Hello! Ding, 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 ding. Toaster from Ms. Zielinska. "It's a kind of terrorism. To us, it was shocking." In most European countries, she explained, reproductive health services are performed in ordinary health facilities. At general doctor's offices and hospitals that offer all the other things that hospitals offer. That way there aren't any protesters waiting to, the word in the Huffington Post story is heckle. The better word, the less weaselly word, is torment. Women who go to these facilities. Ms. Bassett, in her writing, continues, "The women discovered during their visit that women in the United States have missing rights compared to the rest of the world. For instance, the U.S. is one of three countries in the world, that would be three, count them, three, that does not guarantee women paid maternity leave. The UN suggests that countries guarantee at least 14 weeks of paid parental leave. But you see, that would be communism. Because while we love us some fetuses, we don't give much of a damn about them after they leave the birth canal. Because after they leave the birth canal, they are no longer useful in controlling the filthy females, who are, of course, the seat of all sin." Some countries go further. Iceland requires 5 months paid leave for each parent, and an additional 2 months to be shared between them. Ms. Radde said, "The lack of accommodation in the workplace to women's pregnancy, birth, and postnatal needs is shocking, unthinkable in any society, and certainly one of the richest societies in the world." Lady, we ain't rich no more. Get it out of your head that we are rich. A nation is only rich when that nation concentrates its wealth broadly instead of in the hands of 40 families. 40 families are rich, madam. The United States is not. What wealth we do have, we spend. Well, look, I mean, the right wing is so ever-loving fond of comparing governmental budgets to how one runs a household. It is, of course, a bullshit comparison because ordinary households can't print their own money. But still, let's work within that rubric, shall we? Let's say you're running your household, and you have a house payment, and you have utilities to pay, and there's homeowners insurance and car insurance, and there's a car payment, and there's gas to put in the car, and once in a while you like to eat food. But you've got a member of the family who is an absolute raving paranoid maniac, who's absolutely convinced that everybody on the block one of these days is going to turn on you and come and attack you. Even though you already have so many firearms and so much ammunition in your house that you don't have room for anything else. You don't even have nice carpet anymore because, well, the guns, they're everywhere. But nonetheless, because of this paranoid maniac in your home, you still have to spend half of everything you get in your family budget every month on more goddamn guns and more goddamn bullets. Hey, you think we could have steak this week? If I give you steak, you'll just become dependent. No, we're going to buy another AR-13. I mean, shit happens. It's a dangerous world out there. The only thing that'll stop a bad neighbor with a gun is a good neighbor with a gun, and we are going to be the good neighbors. So, Rice again, if you're lucky, do you have any idea how much ammunition prices have gone up? That's the United States as a household budget. Yeah, but we need new tires. We need new guns. Our neighbors will just come and slash our tires. But we can shoot them if we catch them doing it. We can shoot them with one of our many, 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 many guns. Yeah, but they're going to repo the house. We haven't made a payment in months. I know. And when they come to repo the house, we can shoot them with our guns. So we're going to spend half the monthly budget on guns again. Well, of course, it's my job to keep you safe. That's us. So I appreciate the UN working group coming here. I'm glad they went to Alabama. I'm glad they went to, Jesus, Texas. They couldn't go to a New York or a Vermont because then we would have looked sane. And those states are outliers to the American experience now. Do we all fully grasp that fact? Outliers. To coin the term that is getting bandied about more and more lately, Alabama, Talabama, Mississippi Stan, Texas Stan, those are the new normal because the South has, in fact, risen again. Another main area of concern for the delegation is violence against women, particularly gun violence. Women are 11 times more likely to be killed by a gun in the United States than in other high-income countries, and most of those murders are perpetrated by an intimate partner. While the Obama administration has talked a lot about combating violence against women, its efforts have been frustrated by Congress's ability to pass new federal gun restrictions. Well, that's because you can have my guns when you pry them from my cold, dead fingers, and I'll, by God, take out a bunch of you before my fingers are cold and dead, because freedom. And so what if my grandkids are starving? What good is being able to eat if you ain't free? And if you can't have a whole house full of guns, you ain't free. You understand? These sissy women need to go back to their sissy England and their sissy Poland and their sissy Costa Rica, where they ain't got no guns and they ain't got no freedom. One of these days, Merca will just roll over the lot of you, because we're free and they ain't, because they ain't got no guns. You'll see. The women's other recommendations for the U.S. include passing campaign finance reform that would allow more women to be elected into office, because the networks that raise money for political candidates are mostly dominated by men. They also, because that's going to happen. They also suggested raising the minimum wage, which disproportionately affects women, and passing a federal law to stop the slew of new abortion restrictions in the states that are shutting down women's health choices across the South. How about we just... never mind. Shut up. Ms. Radde said, religious freedom does not justify discrimination against women, nor does it justify depriving women of their rights to the highest standard of health care. While the delegates, because we've got to have some happy talk here, while the delegates were shocked by many things they saw in the U.S., perhaps the biggest surprise of their trip, they said, was learning that women in the country don't seem to know what they're missing. Yeah, I know. And this is something that I have heard women who were on the forefront of the rights movement of the late 60s and 70s lament. Somewhere along the way, the ball got dropped. The women's rights movement was characterized by an image of bra burning and not an image of being freed from cultural shackles. And so, what Ms. Radde said. So many people really believe that U.S. women are way better off with respect to rights than any woman in the world. They would say, prove it. What do you mean other people have paid maternity leave? Well, they do. But how many paid maternity leave stories coming out of the civilized world have been aired in such? I mean, they don't talk about paid maternity leave on Dancing with the Stars. They don't talk about paid maternity leave on America's Got a Toothache. They don't talk about paid maternity leave in these goddamn political pageants. Do people in the United States understand that if a woman goes to get an abortion in a sane, civilized country, that she doesn't face a phalanx of sweet granny McCuckoos waving dead baby posters in their face? How do you make a dead baby float? Two scoops of dead baby and one in a glass of root beer. Ah, I'll be here all night. No. We don't know these things, Ms. Radde notes. We don't know these things because we ain't told these things. This information is not presented for the American people. And then you have to deal with the fact that if the American people were made aware of things like paid maternity leave, a good rock solid 30-40% of them would say, well, hell, I don't want that, because that would make the old lady a communist there. I can't have her laying around after she's done had a baby. I mean, she get 5 weeks, 5 months, whatever, paid maternity leave. Well, hell, she'll just not want to go back to work. And then I'll have to go back to work. Don't ruin a good thing, you nosy meddling women. Go home to your Poland and your Engeland and your Costa Rica. and leave us good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, Christian, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexuals to our own ends. We'll took care of ourselves like we has ever since we pulled ourselves up by our own bootstraps and got our slaves and headed west. Note coming in from Asa in Vancouver. Come on, Bob. Them sissy Europeans may have paid maternity leave, but answer this. Are they exceptional? They damned well are not, Brother Deacon Asa. They ain't exceptional. Ain't nobody exceptional except Americans. Because we has the greatest country in the world on earth now, today, forever, amen, indivisible, under God. And that's what makes us exceptional. We're exceptional when we can't take time off to take care of our newborn Merkin exceptional babies. Because Merkin babies is exceptional, and they don't need no caring for. They just haul themselves up by their bootstraps on their way head first right out of the birth canal. And they's born exceptional, and they grow exceptional, and they learn exceptional, and everybody's above average. Because freedom. And that, by God, is how a Thorn in the Side Thursday beginneth. Yeah. I agree with Paul from Parts Unknown's assertion. That we are not our side as progressives doing nearly enough to make what we want known and considered. When was the last time that you happened across a clip of someone from the progressive side of any, either in the Senate or the House, standing up saying, you know what, one of these days we got to have universal single-payer health care coverage? We just kind of went to ground, didn't we, after the Affordable Care Act was passed? I haven't seen that in a while either. Yep, sure have it. Sure have it. So, two out of the three tins of Paulmans are spoken for. If you would like the third one, well, do please just make sure I get your mailing address to forward on to Paul from Parts Unknown, and a minimum contribution of just $40. Mm-hmm. And they really are they're great on the New Year's Eve table. People will flock to them. It'll blow your mind. So let's take our top of the hour break. We've got this being Thursday, the 17th of December, 2015. We've got the Green News Report on its way. After that, we can engage in conversation because this is, after all, conversation radio, and the lines are open. Area code 304-574-8178. Or area code 304-663-HORN, 304-663-4676. Yes, that is that's the stress line, named in memory of the gone but not forgotten, inimitable Bill Mr. Stress Miller. Skype to Skype is Bob Kincaid Horn, if you want to go that way. That's cool, too. There's a lot of different ways to go about this. Most, Most cell phone dialing plans do not charge long distance anymore. That's kind of why the no 800 number. Although maybe that's something we need to add back in the future. It's worth thinking about. So, a little break, conversation, or, God knows, more filibobster. It can go either way. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
I'm trying to be less polite. I'm saying what I really think. The president's a fool. I don't want to get up early, and I wish I had a good stiff drink. I'm trying to be less polite. I want to call a spade. I want to stop the war because I know the war will send too many children to an early grave. I'm trying to be less polite. I'm trying to be less polite. I'm fed up with the Christian wrong. Let the people marry, tell me why are you so worried. Let me sing it to you in this song.
Thursday, December 17th, 2015.
The biggest problem this world has today is not President Obama with global warming, which is inconceivable. This is what he's saying.
Republicans hold another presidential primary debate on national security, but skip right over energy and climate change. House Republicans lift oil export ban. 90% of disasters are caused by extreme weather. Plus, November 2015 was the hottest November on record.
Well, that's getting disturbingly predictable. All of those stories and more straight ahead. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
We need to take an offensive approach by using our energy.
Well, that would be offensive, Governor Huckabee.
Our energy, the one weapon we have.
Our energy is the one weapon we have? Really? This is your Green News Report.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen, just 3 days after nearly 200 governments from around the world adopted an historic agreement in Paris to finally take action on climate change, the GOP holds a debate and no one mentions
that largest worldwide agreement ever.
Yeah, it was really remarkable. You'd think they would cover this major international agreement in a debate about international relations.
Yeah,
but
especially since it has to do with national security.
That debate, hosted by CNN on Tuesday in Las Vegas, was indeed focused on foreign policy and national security. But CNN moderators asked zero questions on climate change, energy, or even the Paris Agreement. Now, in the undercard debate, former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee brought it up himself.
We ought to be drilling every bit of oil, getting all the coal out. We need to be going after our natural gas and biofuels and become the energy exporter to the world. We need to take an offensive approach by using our energy, the one weapon we have. The president thinks that climate change is the number one enemy. I think people bombing us is a bigger enemy than the temperature change over several hundred years.
Never mind that we have infinite energy coming from the sky and that the U.S. is already a leader in exporting new clean energy technology.
What does Mike Huckabee want us to do? Pollute them to death?
Apparently. Ohio Governor John Kasich ridiculed the landmark Paris Agreement and the world's focus on the existential threat of climate change impacts on human civilization.
And when I see they have a climate conference over in Paris, they should have been talking about destroying ISIS because they are involved in virtually every country, you know, across this world. Now,
oh, I love that. Let's criticize Paris for not being tough enough on terror.
Billionaire Donald Trump disagrees with both Kasich and Huckabee, however.
The biggest problem this world has today is not President Obama with global warming, which is inconceivable. This is what he's saying. The biggest problem we have today is nuclear proliferation, and having some maniac, having some madman go out and get a nuclear weapon.
A madman, a maniac, going out and getting a nuclear weapon? Is that an argument against voting for Donald Trump?
I guess so. And also keep in mind that the Defense Department called climate change a national security threat in a report issued just in July. Polls show that two-thirds of Americans support U.S. action on climate change. So it's really curious why the CNN moderators chose to ignore those facts and ignore the landmark Paris Agreement.
Because
this is CNN.
Meanwhile, during the debate, Congress reached a deal to fund the government through September, and that includes a provision long sought by the oil industry to end the 40-year-old ban on exporting U.S. crude oil. The ban, which has been in place since the Arab oil embargo of the 1970s. In exchange for lifting the oil export ban, Democrats got a 5-year extension on tax credits for the wind and solar industries. Now, while that tax credit is crucial for the renewable energy industry, by the way, the oil industry's tax breaks are permanent and have been in place for 100 years.
So renewables have to go in every couple of years and beg for help.
Yes.
Meanwhile, the government picks winners and losers by choosing to subsidize oil, coal, and natural gas permanently.
Finally, the world just had its hottest November ever recorded globally.
Oh, don't tell the Republicans. They say it's getting colder.
Well, that's according to NASA, which also says that 2015 is virtually locked in to be the hottest year on record. And speaking of national security, a new United Nations report finds that 90% of major disasters around the world are caused by extreme weather. And the United States is in the top 5 countries with the highest number of disasters.
Well, when people die from disasters, apparently that is not a national security threat. That's just, hey, that's life. For much more on all of the stories we covered today and the ones we couldn't get to, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can download our reports anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, or iTunes. Find us and follow us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
That's life.
That's life.
That's what all the people say. You're riding high in April, shot down in May. But I know I'm...
All righty then, 9 minutes past the hour on this Thorn in the Side Thursday. They all run together after a while, after 10 years plus. I'm proud and thrilled to announce that this year's allotment of Paulmans are gone. Yes, they are. Our buddy Michael in Madison just picked up the last tin. Michael says, I tuned in just in time to hear about the Paulmans. You live? I haven't heard Less Polite in ages, so I'm thinking, maybe an old show? No, not an old show. No, that goes back to what Paul from Parts Unknown was saying about progressives needing to be less polite. And even the line about the president's a fool. I don't like to say that about the president not sure, but sometimes, you know, when he expects the stump liquor bunch to behave like sober people, well, purdy is as purdy does, you know. But anyway, Michael says, well, either way, I just PayPal'd $50 that I'm sure are well needed. If and you're live and nobody engaged that last tin of Paulmans before me, please have them sent to, and there's the address. Michael says, I got my hands on some Paulmans a few years back. Holy cats, were they magnificent. Yes, they are. So, Carol, Bob, and Michael, enjoy this year's allotment of Paulmans. And then maybe drop a note and let us know. Well, because if they weren't so labor-intensive, I think it has been suggested in the past that Paul should sort of make them a thing. But it is labor. You know, they are literally, he literally skins the almonds by hand, almond by almond. Now, when you get your tin of Paulmans, look at them and imagine how labor intensive that is. And then the roast, the tossing and the organic extra virgin olive oil and the sea salt and the roasting and the toasting and the yum. Yes, yum, yum. So thank you very kindly again for this annual holiday tradition, the sharing of the Paulmans. Thank you to Paul from Parts Unknown. Let's run over to the Skype line where Thomas is awaiting.
Hey, Bob, how are you?
What's happening?
You know, great minds think alike. Me and Blake were talking about this on Some Say, where I wish I had $5 million to start an organization to get guys like you, and I wish I had mentioned you. I'd just slipped my mind, considering you're coming up, you come up next after our show, but like you and Cenk and, you know, maybe Mike Malloy and a whole bunch of other people to host forums in all 50 states and shame the candidates into showing up, like the presidential ones. And if they don't show up, do what the conservatives do. Give them grief and give them lots of grief.
Mm-hmm.
The herding like cats thing, we've been beaten enough with that, you know, as a progressive movement. We need to be a movement and a revolution like Bernie says. And I just wish.
Well, you know where I stand on cat herding, right, Thomas?
Yeah. Well, no, I don't. But
I think Kurt. I whenever anybody says that being a progressive is like and getting progressives to take action is like herding cats, I say piffle. That's easy. No, we are getting progressives to do stuff is like wrangling butterflies.
Yeah. Yeah.
With a can of wet little Friskies, you can get a lot of cats to do a lot of stuff.
Yeah, that is true. And a thing called chicken nibbles. Oh my God.
But no, this is as soon as you think you got one butterfly cornered, all the rest decide to flutter away in all their myriad different directions.
Yeah, and they're so pretty and nice, and then
and flutter, 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 flutter.
Yeah. No, I'm equally as frustrated because we need a movement and we need a revolution, and just one person who happens to be one of the greatest people that this country has seen is not going to do it. You know, it frustrates the hell out of me, and I really wish I did have that money, but unfortunately I'm not a selfish conservative.
But it does need to happen.
Yeah.
We could sit here and brainstorm this on the air and go off way into the weeds and play night baseball and all of those euphemisms that mean stuff that make people's eyes cross and run off the road and just. But one of them, no, I mean I've looked at what if What if we created a union of progressive broadcasters?
I would love that. Or even a co-op.
Okay, call it what you will. Call it cabbage. But what you do is you everybody agrees to pool everything, and you come to an agreed upon amount of money necessary to keep it all going, and it is shared out, share and share alike.
Well, Nicole Sandler over at RadioOrNot.com is doing something similar on her own. She did a directory for called the Liberal Media or the Liberal.media to help other progressives find voices like yours, mine, hers. And she, I sent her as many as I could find. And we need that, that kind of groupthink is exactly what we need, you know, and, you know, we just really need to be able to harness this and then shame them. And, because supporting is great. But once we do that, we just, let the Republicans take control. And where has that gotten us?
Precisely nowhere.
Exactly, yeah. Well, unless you have a golden parachute like Carly Fiorina.
I guess, speaking of golden parachutes, I heard the other day that it looks like iHeartRadio may be going to sing with the choir Bleeding Eternal.
Yeah, I'm not sure, but it doesn't...
And the thing is, I went, well, what a pity for iHeartRadio. And then I read down into the story and said, iHeartRadio, formerly known as Clear Channel.
Mm-hmm.
And I went, yeah. Well, there's your answer. I mean, you know.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly it. And it's, I just wish that, you know, we have so many good, smart people on our side. I sound like that T-Rump. But we really do.
We got your best good smart people over here.
And we don't need to like penetrate anything.
Don't say penetrate.
We just need to corral them. You know? I the other reason I called too was did you hear the story out of Texasistan on Raw Story about the slap happy.
That's just precious. Again, if only George Soros was out there actually funding the progressive infrastructure,
right?
There would be 100 progressives on the ground going to wish this miserable twit happy holidays. Or it would be particularly useful if somebody would wish him happy Hanukkah.
Well, yeah, I always wonder.
But Hanukkah's over now, right?
But yeah, I think it was yesterday or today. But I always wonder about the Judeo and the Judeo-Christian part when they expressly make you say Merry Christmas. I guess do they think that it's okay because Jesus was apparently a Jew? Is that
well?
It?
And so no. It's deeper than that, Thomas. And you've got to. That's the benefit of having been raised in evangelical Christianity. It's not just that it's okay because Jesus was a Jew. He was. I mean, he was an itinerant Palestinian, semi-literate day laborer.
Yep.
But it's not just that. It's that one of these days, whether they like it or not, all the Jews are going to be Christians.
Well, yeah.
And that's going to be when Jesus comes back in his holy roles, and he's going to stand there, and he's coming back pissed. And he's going to have a fully automatic AR-15. Okay, none of this pansy sissy panty wasted, semi-automatic stuff. I mean, it's going to be squeeze the trigger and blazes, just blazes of salvation. Death are gonna issue forth at 3,200 feet per second from the muzzle of that sumbitch. Okay, and it's going to be like having a cheat code on a video game, and it's going to be like up, down, left. Toggle infinite ammo, just, you know. And so he's going to come back with all of that, and he's going to get Huckabee and Franklin Graham and all them good, upstanding, God-fearing, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, ammosexual Christians, and he's going to say, all right, round them Jews up, we're having a talk. and they're going to get all the Jews together. And when Huxtable and Franklin Graham and Dick Land over at the Southern Baptist Convention start thinking about this, I mean, it gets their withered old members to jumping like a snake in a microwave. And they say, and Jesus is going to look at them and say, get all them Jews together and tell them to confess that I am the Messiah. And any of them that don't, I'm going to let you gig them like frogs. You can crucify them, you can stomp them, you can garrot them, you can shoot them, you can cut them, you can burn them, do whatever you want to. And Franklin Graham and Mike Huxtable, get the hands start getting down their pants. And Jesus, yeah, all the Jews going to confess the name of the Lord. And it really, then that's when they start having to pass out the tissues.
See, I always thought it was homoerotic, but I didn't think it was that sodomy based. But okay.
No, it is. It is. It really is. I mean, they get all excited because, see, it's okay to say Judeo-Christian and insist that saying Merry Christmas is Judeo-Christian, because it don't matter. I mean, the most hardcore, curls hanging down his hat, head, funny hat wearing, bearded, won't sit next to a woman on a bus or an airplane, Orthodox fucking weirdo, he is gonna be a Christian someday when Jesus comes back.
Okay.
Because I mean, wouldn't you confess Christ if the choice was either that or get murdered?
Totally. I'm game. I guess I'm going to heaven. who knew?
I mean, it worked for the Spanish Inquisition, didn't it?
Yeah, pretty, yeah.
No, you're Jewish, right? Well, yeah. You want to die Jewish or you want to live Christian? Oh, I will live Christian. Here's some pulled pork barbecue and a nice sauce. Have at it.
Well,
yum.
I always thought that the Mormons were crazy, but now I see them as benign because at least they wait till after you die to change you.
Yeah.
So there's that. So, yeah, no, thank you for explaining it to me because... Wow, I need to, you're the former Southern Baptist prayer meeting Wednesday guy that I go to for all this. I think now that it's better than ever calling these freaks evangelical monsters.
Yeah, I think evangelicals just kind of handles it, but...
Well, yeah, true. But I've taken so much of your good stuff lately, I kind of feel like I'm...
Yeah, but I'm open source. steal freely. I mean, flattery is the sincerest form of
fair enough,
something.
Fair. Yeah. Yeah. Well, because my theory on this... is if your faith is as strong as you claim, you know, and you can keep that stiffy without the Viagra,
yeah.
Why do you need me to validate your faith? Why do I, like, why, this is what I don't understand. Maybe you can explain this to me, because I never understood this even as a conservative. Why do they constantly need to be validated? Is it that? Because we don't. We just have facts and reason and logic on our side.
And that's demonic.
Yeah, true.
And you probably need a good exercising.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, because I think I gained about 20 pounds.
Well, with the stuff that comes in through the mails here at holiday time, there's going to be a whole lot more of me come January. I'm a pitiful wreck right now. I have been a cheese curd eating fool.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm just, you know, crushing up Crestors and cutting lines out on the mirror and just, yeah. Give me another cheese curd. Yeah.
Well, if Kim Jong-un goes missing, maybe you can take over real quick and fix that place.
I don't know. It all depends on whether whether Shirley can ship to from the Ellsworth Creamery to Pyongyang.
I'm sure we can make that work.
By the way, if you ever get your hands on them, Thomas...
Mm.
Again, it is the Ellsworth Creamery of Ellsworth, Wisconsin.
Okay.
It's a co-op, RGBH-free, growth yuckies, no, and the cheese curds come in plain and ranch and garlic, Cajun. Ooh, and taco, and my particular favorite, lemon pepper.
I'm in garlic. You said garlic, and I'm there. I got rid of vampires and yum. So, it's like,
well, I go lemon pepper and then Cajun, and then it's a pretty close race between garlic and ranch.
Interesting.
And taco ain't shabby. And the plain ones, you know what? And you know, if you getting the batter right is really critical. But you batter these little bastards and you deep fry them. Holy God Almighty!
When did this turn into the food channel? I'm just curious.
It's the holidays. We started off with Palmans, and we've gone and we've gone to points elsewhere. Yeah, it's the food porn segment of the program, Thomas.
Fair enough. I like porn.
But and these little bastards are squeaky as hell. They got to be squeaky.
Well, as long as they're not grimacing when you down them. Oh, Lord. But no, thank you for explaining some things to me, Bob, because we were on the same wavelength today. And I think you're right. We need to do a co-op or something and get these butterflies all flying in the right direction. Well, no, left direction. Sorry. You know, even I'm wrong. GPS me.
Well, it would be fun to, and you know, this goes hand in hand, in all seriousness, with Howard Dean's 50-state strategy.
Yeah.
Which, if we would re-implement it, might actually get us the House and Senate back.
Well, no, you're right, because the DFA, which just endorsed Senator Sanders, which was Howard Dean's organization, did it as a vote. And then they said, you know, it was 200, almost 300,000 people that voted, and 86%, I think 10% voted for Hillary. This after Howard Dean wrote a letter and was like, maybe y'all should go for Hillary. And the base said to the founder of the DFA, we're going with Bernie.
Well, I mean, and I don't know if she realizes it or not, but Dr. Senator Secretary Clinton has a problem.
Yes.
She has a progressive problem. And she thinks that we will all get in line in November because we have nowhere else to go. I mean, maybe, you know, she's okay. We'll have our little dalliance with Bernie. And then, you know, when she stomped him real good and yep. really put the Clinton mojo on him.
Yep.
And talked and maybe she can lecture us some more about how this is goddamn well not Denmark, you miserable communist punks. Get in line. This is America. And I'll kneecap your ass for it. Whatever. I'm being a little hateful there. I apologize.
It's okay. That's usually my gig, but go ahead.
Yeah, but she knows that, you know, we're not all going to go, well, fuck it, I'm voting for Trump.
Yeah, that's true. Or Cruz. Because
and then maybe there's somebody down ballot on the progressive way, and we'll go to the and you know, we'll just vote for her for the fuck all of it. And because we were going to vote anyway to vote for our progressive candidate.
Yeah, no. Yeah.
But I don't know about you. I'm seeing a hell of a lot of hashtag Bernie or bust.
Yeah. I'm to the point where I am too. I'm tired of getting I got my hopes up with Hillary the first time. I gave her $5. I was young and dumb and, you know, still heartbroken over Al Gore. And so I did. And I wasn't quite buying Obama's hope and change like everybody else. And so I went safe. And I'm cautiously optimistic, but I don't want to see more Antonin Scalia judges. That's the one thing that scares the living crap out of me. From any of the right wing turbo.
I agree. I agree to an extent, Thomas. But let me offer a caveat, please.
Yeah, go ahead, my friend.
Anybody that you or I want as a progressive on the Supreme Court ain't got a snowball's chance in hell of ever being confirmed.
Can I agree with you. but I'm going to give you a just a little bit of ray of hope. Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Supreme Court appointments can be really dodgy things. Earl Warren was a Republican appointee who turned out to be the antithesis of what he was thought to be. William O. Douglas, mm-hmm. another one. And who was it? Souter? George H.W. Bush nominated Souter?
Yep.
And he didn't turn out to be. It's only the hardcore ideologues, and unfortunately, evil is a preservative, and there's no reason to think that we won't have Uncle Nino Scalia for another 15 years. Hell, that evil son of a bitch might live to be 100 years old, and and nigger will be the last word on his lips as he dies.
Yeah, that's sad but true, because he wouldn't want to give up.
But the larger point I was trying to make is that by the time you get into that atmosphere where you can be considered as a potential nominee to the Supreme Court, even the liberal members of the Supreme Court are deeply, deeply conservative, because the practice of law itself, Thomas, is deeply, deeply conservative. Within our constitutional framework, the prime purpose of our legal system is not to defend or protect rights. It is to defend and protect money.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And
so by the time you get up there, this for me was the moment when the scales fell away, to the extent that they hadn't already. When that sweet Granny McCuckoo case came up, and in which it was a unanimous decision, all 9 members of the Supreme Court of the United States, including the notorious RBG, agreed that a woman simply trying to walk into a clinic that provides abortions did not have a right not to be assaulted by the sweet Granny McCuckoos of the world.
Yeah, okay? No.
That was all 9. That was the boo, brooga, brooga, 9 black robe judges legislating from the activist judges bench. Boo! Yeah, they voted that a woman does not have a right not to be assaulted by religious maniacs.
No. To be fair, Bob, they're exceptional Americans. Being exceptional.
Oh, they're exceptional maniacs. Yeah, but exactly. But by the same token, that woman simply trying, and maybe she's not going for an abortion. Maybe she's just like these 3 women of past childbearing age who were simply trying to walk into a clinic in Alabama to see what it's like, and there were big, pasty-faced, doughy, fat bastards standing outside going, "You're a goddamn baby-killing whore, you whore-killer baby whore-killer."
Yeah. Or the Colorado shooter who shot up an abortion clinic.
Yeah, I'm a protector of the babies.
Yeah. Mr., the hapless protector didn't protect a single baby. Because that's not what they did there.
But I want to make sure that the larger point goes all the way home. Liberals said that was okay, too.
Yeah, no, you're right. No, you're right. And I don't know, maybe I'm still a little bit naive because of being younger and my heart hasn't been completely shattered yet. It's getting close, though.
Yeah, I understand. And by the way, we've got a note coming in from Randy in PA who says, perhaps you could explain why Justice Ginsburg hasn't resigned yet. Isn't she 92? She may be, and she's survived pancreatic cancer like twice, and nobody does that.
Yeah.
The reason she has not resigned is because A, there is no retirement age for Supreme Court justices. It is an appointment for life on good behavior, with the only way to remove them being impeachment by the House and trial by the Senate.
And like that'll
Now Souter resigned. Souter retired. He didn't resign. He retired.
Yeah.
Stevens retired. because they just got they got tired of it. It's got to be a miserable business.
Well, yeah, but the,
it has its perks. I mean, you don't work much. But the reason the notorious RBG can't retire is because that would then open the slot to and it would require a presidential appointment. And she is, you know, you don't live in some sort of legal bell jar where you don't consider politics over there.
True.
And so she knows that there is no way under present circumstances that the president of the United States could get a Supreme Court nominee through. And so she has to hang on literally for dear life.
I don't mean this in a disparaging way, but you're older than me. When was the last time, because I don't remember this, I have young timers. When was the last time a judge died on the bench?
Oh, geez.
Because I'm 35 or 38 and I don't remember.
I can't remember the last time they were one time that they were worried about it. Thurgood Marshall had a lot of health problems.
Yeah.
And during the there's a story recounted in one history of the Supreme Court. Maybe it was the one that was written by Woodward and Bernstein, where he was sick and he was in the hospital. And Richard Pinhead Nixon, as Harry Truman called him, sent Secret Service agents around ostensibly to guard the door of Justice Marshall's hospital room. And he summoned one of them in and got out a notepad and wrote down two words, folded it up, gave it, and said, "Take this back to Mr. Nixon." And all it said was, "Not yet."
Nice.
Because Nixon hated the very air that Thurgood Marshall breathed.
Fair enough. I don't know. I just, that's the thing I worry about. And every once in a while they get it right. And, you know, I don't know what else. What else to save this country? And I guess I'm just happy that I have my dual citizenship to Britain. I guess.
Yeah, I know. Bragging again.
Was that? I know, right? Well, I wonder if polygamy is okay. I'll marry for green card.
I'm hoping maybe there's a sponsor in a foreign country somewhere that would welcome us in. Okay. So I missed this. I actually wondered about it, but yeah, William A. Sparky let me know. William H. Rehnquist, drug abuser and addict, apparently died in office September 3rd, 2005.
Okay. How did I not remember that? Wow. 24/7 news cycle really screws you, doesn't it?
Well, I couldn't remember if he died in office or if he just, you know, died.
Yeah, fair enough.
Oh, and just sort of rounding out the picture of the notion that the Supreme Court is inherently a conservative institution, let's remember, at the same time that they were saying that woman going in for a pap smear,
yes,
does not have the right to not be assaulted by Sweet Granny McCuckoo.
Mm-hmm. She's so nice.
Yeah, she's just a sweet little. She's just a sweet little Catholic lady who's worried about the little fetuses.
It's the thing to be worried about.
Well, if you got nothing else.
Yeah, exactly.
There's always fetuses. But at the same time that that woman doesn't have that, the Supreme Court has a buffer zone of some, you know, Jesus, what, 60, 70, 100, 500 feet? Yeah, they've got a buffer zone. But a woman going to see see if she's got cancer, she doesn't.
Yeah.
No buffer zone for you. And that was agreed to by no less than three women.
Well, you depressed me. You want to make
six
me
men.
Well, it's always about the penises, isn't it? They do the best penetration of life.
The peni, yes.
I like penis. We had a discussion on about that on our show a while back. Peni or penises. I think I won with penises because I like saying it.
Yeah, it is. It's penises.
Yeah, okay.
Because that's not a Latin word.
Okay, fair enough.
I don't know. In fact, I don't even know the etymology, but if it was Latin, it would be, I don't know, maybe it's pens penis.
Now, that's a tricky dick to say.
But that would make it pens penis, penne, penem, penne, penes, penes, penibus.
And this is why I suck at Scrabble.
Hey, Latin. I mean, I can decline words that aren't Latin. But I don't think it is. I don't think it's a Latin word. So that would mean it's not peni. But that would. But in order for it to be peni, it would have to be P-E-N-U-S in the singular.
No.
Alumnus, alumni, which we pronounce alumni, but alumni is actually A-L-U-M-N-A-E, which means a female alum.
See, this is why I go to you and Tom Hartman for information, because words are hard for me. And
I'm a long-time knower of words.
Yeah, I'm not. I should probably call whenever I'm playing the girlfriend in Scrabble. I might do better.
I'm well-versed in the art of word knowing.
Fair enough. But, Bob, thank you.
You're more than welcome, Thomas. It's always a pleasure.
And we are covering the debate, as usual, ad nauseum. On Saturday.
I think I'm going to be going out to a debate watching party.
Cool. Feel free if you want right before we start to call in. We're starting at 7 o'clock, the hour before they start at 8 Eastern, and it'll be interesting. So because I don't know who's showing up yet to help me host.
Well, this is our last debate, isn't it?
Yeah, for this year. Yep.
No, this is our last Democratic debate.
I think there are two others that haven't been announced.
Oh, did Debbie Wasserman Schultz get in?
No, I think this was the third one, right?
Yeah, I thought there were only going to be three.
No, I'm pretty sure there were five or six, and some of them were for after, like right in the middle of right before Super Tuesday or something, if I recall properly. But then again, they're so vague on the details for this because, you know, Hillary. Oh, before I let you go, the one more thing that I want to address, I feel like Columbo. One more thing that I wanted to address.
Yeah, just one more thing there, ma'am. Yeah.
I saw someone use Hitlery, who was a progressive, in a chat.
Oh, yeah, of course.
My head nearly exploded. Can we? I don't care what people say, but can we refrain?
No, we can't.
I wish we could. You know,
You got people out there who think she's worse than Trump.
Yeah, I know, and that's just no, really not. She at least can be told what a coherent sentence to say.
Well, whatever. No. Here's my take. Wherever else she will kneecap progressives, she is at least a bulwark against the wholesale rollback of a woman's right to choose. And she will get that. She will get that right.
Yeah.
She might appoint people to the Supreme Court who think very much like Bishop Willard Romney who think like Bishop Willard Romney, he said, getting it right.
Corporations are people, my friend. Of course they are. Human beings, my friend.
Yeah, she might appoint somebody to the Supreme Court that thinks just like Bishop Willard Romney on that, but that person will have to pass a litmus test that she or he will not vote to overturn a woman's right to choose.
Win some, you lose some, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that's the bulwark. That's the benchmark standard. That's the reason. I mean, she's out there on the campaign trail saying, I'm a woman. It's time for a woman to be president. Vote me.
Yeah, and I got mad when Carly Fiorina did it, too. Equally mad.
Mm-hmm.
But I got nothing else. So I want to thank
you. By the way, thank you. Thank you very kindly, Thomas. 7:42 p.m. 7:42 p.m. Damn it, Gerald! Because Hitlery counts. Adolf Hitler doesn't. Hitlery does, but because it uses the entire word.
See, I didn't know that. So, that's not fair. I didn't know. Can I?
No. I'm sorry. The duck has already dropped from the ceiling.
Oh, damn it! Mm-hmm. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
Do I have to confess anything?
No. Just say mea culpa, mea maxima culpa, and you're cool.
Okay, fair enough. Thank you, Bob.
All right, Thomas. See you. Bye. And over to the Gizmo line, otherwise known as the stress line, where I bet Todd is waiting. Is that you, Todd?
Hello?
Yeah.
I thought this was the, I thought this was the other line. I was trying not to use Bill's line too much.
No, that's fine. You're cool.
Oh, I don't know. It sounds kind of like weird, kind of like in and out to me.
You want to turn around and try the other line?
I would like to if it's okay with you.
Yeah, that's cool. I'll hang up. Just dial me right back. Stand by.
Okay.
Sometimes people can hear on the stress line. Sometimes people can't hear on the stress line. It works like that. So we'll just wait for Todd. And there's Todd.
Wow, that sounds much better.
Yeah, so much better, right?
Yeah, well, at least on this end. So anyway, strength theory is real because I don't know why. I talked with you the other day, but I got nervous and I really did not touch on some stuff I wanted to ask you about. But Thomas got to it because maybe I was so disgusted with this Supreme Court justice. Because I started thinking about the implications. I don't understand what the outrage is. Do people understand that we had this asshole on the Supreme Court? I'm sorry, I'm cursing already, but...
Don't worry, in my happens.
Mind, but maybe you need to correct me, but in my mind, this is what I'm thinking. Like, a Supreme Court justice, right, especially one of his caliber, they sent a message to people in the state legislatures. Basically, they tell them, how much can you get away with? How far can you go? Because this is what we reset the parameters in certain areas. Do you see where I'm going with this?
I do.
Am I off base with this?
No, keep going.
Well, now, basically, Scalia said, well, you know what? You got a lot of people who were talking about affirmative action and quotas and this and that. Don't worry about it anymore. It doesn't matter. Because when it comes to the Supreme Court, we got you. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. Well, okay, now this is another one of those moments, though, Todd. If you followed the arguments, now this case has not been decided, but if you followed the arguments, it seemed like even the so-called liberals on the court were sketchy and were not impressed with the University of Texas's arguments, which again leads me back to the notion that the Supreme Court is in and of itself and a deeply conservative institution.
I really enjoyed your argument that you made a few minutes ago about that. I totally agree with you. Right, exactly. By nature of the vocation you're going into, because judges mostly have been prosecutors, right, who inherently are usually conservative. You don't see a whole lot of defense attorneys on the Supreme Court.
You know why you don't get a lot of plaintiff's lawyers? And this was explained to me by a real live lawyer who I thought was a brilliant man, and he was. I said, hey, one of these days, would you like to be a judge? And he said, are you out of your mind? Are you out of your tiny little 1L mind? I said, what? And he said, you see the cases we handle in here. You've got an idea of the money that's on the line. I make in a year 50 times what a judge makes. Why would I want to give that up? And if you're a hotshot criminal defense attorney, that is the first name across anybody's lips if you get... you know, if you get in trouble in a given jurisdiction like that hotshot POS who defended Don Blankenswine, that guy's never going to become a Supreme Court judge. Why? Well, because it would cost him money.
He could do two cases
now,
in 5 years and make what the other guy would
Well, and he's not doing two cases in 5 years. He's doing 300 cases in 5 years. Okay? I mean, you don't even want to think about what he charged Don Blankenship. You have to buy a goddamn Powerball ticket to see numbers like that in print.
That evil bastard. I wish people could pull his fucking face. I'm sorry. I wish he could pull his face up now because it frightened me. And when I learned about what he did, like, I'm going to have to go back to this. We're talking about a coal mine, an inherently dangerous place. Like, just because the state...
No, Todd. We're talking about coal mines.
I'm sorry. I didn't conjugate it right, plural. You're right. You're absolutely correct. Which...
And he had running hourly production reports coming from every one of them.
Like a motherfucking ticker tape asshole from the 20s.
Yes. And he recorded every phone call. I mean, he was a little Nixon.
Do you get the visual I just portrayed? You know what I'm saying. You know, of course you do.
But anyway, let me just finish a line of thought here, Todd, on judges.
Go ahead.
Most people, if you go to some, and I'll bet you Billable Rick would agree if he was listening. Let's say you go to your state's law school. I mean, I guess there's a couple in South Carolina. There's only one in West Virginia. We got three medical schools, only one law school. Yeah, guess who's controlling things, right? But let's say you go to your state's law school. Most highfalutin law school, I guess, in Texas is the University of Texas School of Law. West Virginia, it's WVU, Harvard on the Mon. Well, they're going to teach you, presumably, how to be a good lawyer in that state. If, however, you go to one of the thin oxygen law schools that everybody can't get into, say, you know, your Harvard, particularly your Yale, Stanford law, okay?
Right.
They teach you a way of lawyering that isn't about how to work within statutory frameworks, but rather how to get around them. Mm-hmm. Think of... John Yoo, who wrote the torture memos, saying, "Oh, sure, you want to torture people? Yeah, waterboard the fuck out of them. Just say you're not torturing anybody."
Right. They're like
we're gonna declare that waterboarding is not torture, and everybody's gonna be golden. Okay, those law schools teach that stuff, and then on top of it, the right wing has a very, very well-developed, well-defined system of what, for lack of a better term, we would call wingnut welfare, which provides vast amounts of money to support right-wing reactionary lawyers out of these highfalutin law schools, people like Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, anointed future king of America, son of Rafael Eduardo Cruz, the man who forgot to be an American. And they paved the way for these people to worm their way into state and federal government. William Rehnquist, before he was ever a Supreme Court justice, was inside the Justice Department. Okay, and then of course John Roberts, who replaced Rehnquist, was inside the federal government and honed his chops in a right wing Republican Department of Justice. Okay, in ancient Rome, there was something, you know, you ran for praetor, then quaestor, and you work your way up to consul, and it was called the cursus honorum, the course of honor. And it was like a ladder you climbed as a Roman political member of the wealth class. Well, the wingnuts have created something very similar, And along the way, they've got supportive organizations like the Federalist Society.
Oh, yes. See, now you're steering back into school.
And there's a whole, you know, the Heritage Foundation, the Cato Institute, the American Enterprise Institute, there's Americans for Prosperity. There are all of these places where well-heeled, well-financed, right-wing legal insurgents can find purchase and acquire wealth while waiting to be injected into government. And that's how you get an Alito. That's how you get a Roberts. That's how you get your Scalias. They have been groomed and mollycoddled over the decades, especially since the advent of the Powell memo in 1972.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you see, that's the inherent problem that we're in right now, because now you talked about the arguments. That was the next phase of this that I wanted. See, I got so nervous the other night. Now, it took me a second. Now, you're a student of history. Now, remember W.E.B. Du Bois, right?
Yes.
And you remember you remember George Washington Carver?
Sure.
Okay. So the first time I heard Scalia make his statement about where black students should go and where they would do better and this and that, the first thing that hit my mind, I was like, well, that sounds like George Washington Carver.
Booker T. Washington, too, right?
That's what I mean.
Booker T. Washington, who believed in well, he and Carver both wound up at Tuskegee.
Uh-huh.
But Booker T. Washington was a sort of a collaborationist, I guess, would you say?
That's where I'm going with this. Right. In other words, right, Booker T. Right, it was Booker T. I'm sorry. Because Carver was actually, he found out what to do with peanuts. He had a million things to do with peanuts. Yeah. It was Booker T. Washington. Right. So Booker T. Washington espoused that the Negro needed to bring himself up slowly to get assimilated to American society and maybe, you know.
Yeah, which made Booker T. Washington very, very palatable to white racist power structures in America.
Exactly. And so when I heard Scalia read it, because he was friendly, that Ford was a notorious, like, racist and anti-Semitic person, but he liked Carver. And they got along because Carver was like, well, I'll just be all step and fetches, you know, don't worry about me. I'll be okay, because I know that everybody can't come along like me.
Now if you bust out all Rochester on me, we're probably going to have a problem here.
That's the mentality. I'm just trying to bring us back. Come on, you know me better than that.
Well, it's like Carol Baker said a minute ago. She said, Todd cracks me up when he gets his knickers in a knot.
Oh, boy. Carol, I'm glad. You know what, Carol? We wouldn't be able to do this without you. But, that struck me because I remember, man, it struck me when I learned this, you know, when I was a young man about this. Because, remember, I'm from Philadelphia, and remember, W.E.B. Du Bois, the Negro, the Philadelphia Negro, that was his doctorate thesis. And it was very interesting, and it's still relevant. It talks about, like, shit hadn't changed. Shit has not. Things have not fucking changed. We're going backwards.
Oh, wait, no, they changed a little bit, and boy, wasn't it incremental. But, you know, there's some more of that all deliberate speed bullshit, right?
All deliberate.
All slow speed.
As fast as we can go in first gear.
Yep. As fast as we can slowly go.
But all right, so... And I'm not, you know, I know somebody else
who's
talking to you,
Brian. No. Don't, listen, don't get in a hurry. Don't feel like there's no.
I'm irritated, Bob. And see, I'm irritated. Only people I can talk to is my family around here because these people don't even get it. I don't know.
Oh, I know of at least two or three progressives in South Carolina, Stan, that probably you could have a conversation with.
Well, that's a good thing.
I mean, granted, he's been going through a horrible grieving process, but our buddy David over in Florence.
I hear him call. Mm-hmm.
And then Eric, who is in Colombia. In fact, you're not far from Colombia.
About 35 miles.
Yeah. So there's going to be a big Bernie meetup in Colombia that our buddy Eric, who also brings us Pastor Pillow, is going to be part of hosting.
Yeah, Bernie. You know, I don't want to get started on Bernie, but it's strange. Bernie in reality is a lot bigger than what you see on the mainstream media if you choose to watch that nonsense. But that's a whole other story. I really want to go back to the Supreme Court thing because this really now you talk
go anywhere
about
you want, man.
Well, look, this is really irritating. This is really irritating me. Because, you know, like I've been telling, like I told you before, like for 4 years, I was a news monitor. I got paid to monitor the news. I mean, that was a dream job. So this was all when Roberts was getting inaugurated and, you know, Chad getting baptized as the Supreme Court, the head of the Supreme Court. And you could see in his eyes, first of all, he really did not want that guy to be president. So he was like, all right, I got it. He couldn't even get the speech straight, right? So anyway, so he's the ringleader with the Supreme Court.
And he also sat there during his confirmation hearings, we all remember this, and said, well, I mean, my view of the Supreme Court is that, you know, I'm only going to sit there and call balls and strikes. And the minute he gets the goddamn robe on, he turns into a judicial activist overturning the Voting Rights Act as soon and every chance he gets.
Bob, that's where I'm going with this shit. That's what I'm saying. What the fuck, man? Fuck these motherfuckers. Well, we don't like Sotomayor. She might be an activist judge. I'm like, who are you, motherfucker? What the hell have you been? You are not. Listen, I'm not a goddamn lawyer, but I know this motherfucking much. I've been to court. Everything is supposed to be based on legal precedent. And they just said, fuck precedent. We don't like this shit. We're going to do this shit over. Fuck that. Am I wrong?
Oh, no. No, Roberts and Alito both perjured themselves.
They did. Yep. Tell the story, Bob.
Well, no, they just sat there and lied. And, you know, I'm a strong believer in stare decisis. The precedence of the court drives the decisions of the court. Bull.
As soon as they had their ducks in a row, they became the most activist. This is the worst.
There was no stare decisis for Citizens United, Todd. That was crafted. That was crafted out of whole cloth. And then D.C. versus Heller, for God's sakes, the mother of so much of the blood sodden mayhem that our country finds itself in. Finding that the Second Amendment right was a personal right and not a right related to militias, even though the Second Amendment doesn't make any sense if you excise the word militia.
No, it doesn't. That was really kind of extended.
And for anybody with even a 1L ability to parse legal statutory or constitutional language, okay, the Second Amendment says. Oh hell! I don't want to blow it. Let me get the language, because this is really telling.
I'm going to pull it up. I got the technology.
2ND Amendment. Okay. A well-regulated. Oh. See, they like this prefatory language in crafting the Bill of Rights, so. We got the Second Amendment, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Well, the Supreme Court in D.C. versus Heller just blows all over that and says, nope, this is a personal right, not a group right. Now, compare that with the language in the, 4th Amendment. Okay. Damn it. Go. There we go. Now, it says that more prefatory language, right? Mm-hmm. The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrant shall issue but upon probable cause supported by oath or affirmation, particularly yada, 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 right?
Again, oh, they've been doing that
again, again, prefatory language, though. The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects. Okay, those, the way they phrase that, those are clearly personal rights. Okay, houses, persons, papers, and effects.
Everything in that sentence is personal. Exactly.
Right. The Second Amendment, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms, blah, blah. And yet they find that the Second Amendment is a personal right. You couldn't pass one constitutional law making a bullshit argument like that, and yet that's what you get from the geniuses on the Roberts Court.
Yeah, you know, when you really lay it out like that, it's like, whoa. Well, that's what I was wondering about Scalia. At first, I thought he was like, well, maybe he has a little dementia going on or Alzheimer's or something, because he sounds like a really ridiculous person from the Supreme Court saying anything.
He sounded like that when he was 17 years old.
Well, he has no business being on the Supreme Court. I mean, you know what? You could be racist all you want. It's not a good thing. And you can believe in nonsense all you want. It's not a good thing, but maybe that means you should not be a Supreme Court justice. Do this shit out in the woods somewhere, right? Away from people.
No. That's the thing, though. The resurgence of right wing racism in this country has made it okay for it to come out in the light of day. Wear your hood proudly. I mean. So you know your daddy's little pumpkin, and you've gotten admitted to the Citadel. Sing those Christmas carols with a Klan hood over your head. Be proud, yeah, you're a Klansman. Yeah. I mean, let's just rewrite that dumbass song. And be proud you're a Klansman, because the South's going to do it again. Bingity, 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 bingity.
Excuse me. There's no, you know what the Puerto Ricans say? They say, you know, splaining that. You can't explain that. There's no splaining that, man. You cannot explain that. There's no explaining that.
Well, don't worry. Don't worry, the precious little punkins only got suspended, not expelled. Because wearing Klan hoods at the Citadel is not that's not a violation of the highfalutin honor code.
Well, see, Bob, I think folks aren't connecting the dots, or maybe they are, you don't care, I don't know. But, see, when that incident reminds me of that incident maybe a year and a half or 2 years ago on a bus in Mississippi, where you had some, I think it was, I know that frat from when I was in school. They were party frat. Where they were on the bus. And they were saying, you know, we're not going to have any, you know, niggas in our frat ever, blah, blah, blah. You know what I'm talking about? And when they were singing the song
Yeah.
All right. So, when folks say, well, you know, there's a black president, there's no more racism, you know, you have to connect the dots. Now, here we have a whole group. There were SIGEPS, which is a big party frat. Man, you know,
Sigma Phi Epsilon.
Yeah, we used to call them SIGEPS. And, you know, they are somewhat integrated in some places. I remember them being integrated. They asked me to rush. I didn't want to, but I remember seeing a file cabinet full of exams. You know, they got privilege. In other words, they got the exams, the professors of SIGEPS, they get, you know, all the way up. No matter. Doesn't matter. But my point is that you have to remember, to be in a frat, unless somebody's giving you money, it takes resources, because you have to pay dues, you have to do community service, which takes time away from your studies. You know, there's a lot involved.
I was in one. I know.
Right. So these folks are going to be in charge of hiring people. So, you know, I don't say there's no racism. You got people saying it's bullshit on a bus, and in about 3 or 4 years, you're going to be in charge of hiring people. So you mean to tell me when they see LaQuisha or Daquan, they're going to give them the same break or the same non-bias?
No, and in point of fact, that goes exactly to something that Jack wrote in earlier, Todd. He Jack suggested a couple of thorns for Thorn in the Side Thursday, and one of them, he said, son of a bitch, I got his email here. I knew something like the following had to be going on in this Abigail Fisher case, you know, the UT case, but only found out due to the linked HuffPost article today. So what do we have here? Abigail Fisher, the kid, is whining about not getting into UT Austin because she wanted the connections that come with it. The kid's father has connections to a right-wing scumbag lawyer who has looked for a case like this as he has for cases concerning other legal issues. Kid probably gets the attitude of finding connections due to her father and is scummy enough to be used for a case like this. Right-wing lawyer wants case to end affirmative action, which might be seen as something that helps people without the usual personal and societal connections. The whole thing just oozes with hypocrisy, as is usual with any significant action by the right wing. Son of a bitch.
Sounds about right, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. So what it boils down to is the UT case is a matter of white privilege feeling threatened and wanting to reassert itself. Well, what do you mean my precious little lumpkin daughter can't get into UT? How will she ever form the social connections that she needs? I mean, she won't be able to join Alpha Phi like her mama was back in the day when I courted her from over to the Sigma Alpha Epsilon house.
See? Well, and you know, the converse argument is that, well, if you don't allow certain people to engage themselves in higher education and present themselves in a better way to get a better job and do better in life, then what do you expect?
I know.
So what about this secession we're about to have? Because I remember, you know what first got me interested in Dr. Bill was about a year and a half or 2 years ago when he started talking about the Constitutional Convention.
Because he heard about what Mark Levin was blathering on about. Lucky for Bill, he read it and didn't hear it because Mark Levin has a voice made for print. He put his weird constitutional fetish in print and sold it to people. Dr. Bill got hold of it and I mean, I remember the first time talking to him about it. He said, Bob, these people have designs on destroying. On destroying the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
And they do. And here's the fun part, since we've been talking about the Supreme Court, Todd. You want a right-wing Supreme Court because when that Article 5 convention gets called and, you know, people like Madison said, listen, we're putting it in there because people insist on having it in there. This should never, ever, ever, ever be used. But they put it in there thinking that there's no way the states, as they understood them at the time, there was no way that all those states were ever going to agree to come into a convention again because the states couldn't agree together on what to have
for lunch. That was hard enough the first time. Are you kidding?
Right. So they didn't figure that. But now there's an insurgency going in this country. And so it is going to be critically important to have for the right wing to have a right wing Supreme Court that can walk in on a challenge and say, hey, we're the Supreme Court. You guys called a constitutional convention. The Constitution's out the window. We don't even exist.
Well, see, Bob, what worries me is I think a very small percentage of the population is even discussing this issue, like the Heritage Foundation is, because that's where that scumbag from here.
A very small percentage of the population is talking about anything. A very small percentage of the population, even knows that women, pregnant women in civilized countries, get weeks of paid maternity leave to stay home and make sure their baby gets a good, fair start in life. American women don't even know that. American women don't know that women going to get abortions in other countries don't have sweet granny McCuckoo in their faces. American women just don't goddamn know that. So no, most of America doesn't know that there's a move afoot to destroy the Constitution, and that it is very real and very possible in the next 4 or 5 years. Most Americans don't know that, and then you have to take in that 30 to 40% that if it was to happen would say, well, it seems like a good idea to me. You know what? I want them to make the Confederate flag legal for me to have again because it's heritage, not hate. Can we do that at a constitutional convention?
No, stop it.
You don't think so?
But see, so it was Dr. Bill. I had to let you speak for a while before I was short. But yes, because it frightened the shit out of me. I was like, because they were three quarters. This was when Scott Walker was at the top of the heat. Remember? This shit is scary.
Well, I mean, and you know what's scarier to me? Is you got people out there like Cenk Uygur, ostensibly a progressive thought leader.
With the wolf pack. Mm-hmm.
Who wants that constitutional convention. He thinks that's it would be a great idea.
No, you know what that'll be? That'll be like giving guns and everybody in school. It'll be a shootout, and it'll be ugly. And what more do we have? This is terrible. Awesome. All right.
And by the way, Jack in Shreveport just sent me a note, Todd. He says, on his radio program, Mark Levin has been advertising his Constitutional Convention website as he tries to get people hyped up for it. I forgot the name of the site.
Well,
good. I'm glad Jack did, because I don't want to send any traffic to it. But you know, the fact that they're making the promises they're making, oh, no, it's just going to be, we're going to guarantee that it's only for 24 hours, and we're just going to go in there long enough to pass a balanced budget amendment and stuff like that, and maybe we'll tweak the 14th Amendment a little bit to deal with those goddamned anchor babies.
No,
you know, maybe we'll fix a board. No, they're lying, okay?
No, that's not how it works. I listen to that. I listened to it many times, and tell me if I'm wrong. No. The whole thing gets trapped. The whole Constitution, and they start over from scratch, and they vote on everything, just like they did the first time.
Yeah, because they went into the first one with promises made, and all the promises got torn up the minute the doors were closed.
They barely made it.
And imagine the billions, Todd. Imagine the billions that the Koch brothers and Sheldon Adelson will pour into it. And the other weirdos and the Walton family. Imagine the billions that the hedge fund managers will pour into it to make sure that hedge funds get preferential treatment.
Could that be why you don't hear about this on the mainstream news?
Sure it could. It's also not subject to being explained in a 1 minute and 18 second CNN package.
Oh, CNN. Oh, listen, I'll be honest with you. You know what? Last time I turned them on, it was during the San Bernardino terrible situation. And when they were making up things, and then I was like, oh my God. And you remark, because I don't know. Anyway, I remember what you used to say about CNN and you and them. But it's a shame. They were so crazy. They were the new news, new real news.
Yeah.
They were it. Like, you watch C-SPAN to see what they're actually talking about. Then you watch CNN, and it's like, well, they're actually being truthful. They're reporting news. So, yeah, we don't have that anymore.
No, I remember when CNN, I mean, back when I was there, let's see, the DC team was Frank Sesno and Charles Bierbauer, whom we referred to as Frank Sesmatic and Charles Beerbelly, just because it came easy. Mike Chinoy was in Asia and was fluent in multiple languages there. Oh, I can't remember the woman who covered the Caribbean and Central America and South America. It's a hell of a beat, you know, an entire continent. But she didn't. She wasn't at all afraid to go, go along at night with the Contras or the Sandinistas.
Right.
Yeah, no, you had a lineup of real journalistic talent, and then along came baby Jessica down the well, and everything changed. The 24-hour news cycle was born. The idea of single story coverage was born. 24 hours a day of nothing but baby Jessica down the well.
Well, what I was going to say is that, yes, it's awful. And you know, now that MSNBC is pretty much, they're done. You know, BBC, and this is what I've noticed. BBC, Al Jazeera, RT, even Press TV, which... you know, it's probably Iranian propaganda, but whatever. It's interesting because I'm a cord cutter. I've been a cord cutter since the late 90s. But their equipment, their signal is tight. I mean, it is tight. All those aforementioned stations, they come through tight. Let me tell you. So, that is actually emblematic of one of our other problems here with our infrastructure. Americans think we got the best health care and we have the best this and the best that. No, we don't. People pay less for high-speed internet everywhere else but here, and it's better. That's why that signal comes through clear. And if you don't believe me, you try it. Most people who listen to you, you're hooked up with the internet. You go in there. You look at RT. You look at Al Jazeera. Now, I'll be honest with you. Al Jazeera, they have good coverage. I don't like the Arabic characters up on my computer because, you know, why would I? But... they, you know, you get a different perspective on the news. It's, you know, that's the way to get the news. You have to look at different, you can't, just like when you do a report, just like Dr. Bill, we got to go to primary sources and you have to go to different sources. You know, that's why when you were in school and they said, well, you have to have at least 20 sources, you know, when you're, you know, 15, 20 years old or whatever, you gasp, but it's like, well, there's a reason because when you go through 19 of them, you know, they're all going back to the same source, so... you got to go to the eyeball and see where the dots, you know, where they connect. Okay?
Yeah.
Sorry. I'm just...
No. It's like Carol said a minute ago. Todd is on fire tonight. I love him.
We couldn't do it without you, Carol. We could not do it without you.
We are all humble servants of the Queen of the Minions.
Well, Bob, I hope you have a great evening, and thank you for taking my call.
Thank you for making it. No, seriously.
I really enjoy the conversations with you. I really do.
Well, that's the entire reason for the existence of the horn, Todd. It really, really is.
All right. Take care.
All right. Be good. Bye now. The one and only Todd calling from South Carolina, Stan. Hey, let's run over and check in on the stress line with Jim in Nevada, Stan. Hey, Jim.
What's good, Bob?
What do you know?
Yeah, I was listening to time, then I was thinking, the dialogue, and it started me pondering, started me wondering about, like, okay, Hillary gets the nomination, but she loses the election, and then the Republicans, I don't know, pick your poison, whichever one gets to be president. So undoubtedly, you have some Supreme Court appointments coming up, and they're all going to be conservative, and they're going to end up stacking the court. And then there goes Roe v. Wade, or do they want it? Because I heard they loved, I think it was you, Steve, said they loved having Roe v. Wade. But you think they would overturn Roe v. Wade if that situation presented itself?
I think there are some there who would. I think there's no doubt that Slappy Thomas and Fat Tony or Uncle Nino Scalia, and probably Alito would. John Roberts would probably go along. Kennedy, not so much. But with the right amount of pressure, sure, because Kennedy likes to be courted. he's a bit of a diva. But here's the way that all shakes out, though, Jim. In the next presidential administration, it's not going to be a matter of replacing Slappy Thomas or Uncle Nino or the Kennedy kid. Now, they're all old, but they are not leaving unless they leave feet first. If Bernie or Hillary or even what's his name from Maryland? I'm sorry, it escapes me at the moment.
The Maryland kid, yeah.
If they're elected, then that will mean, depending on the makeup of the Senate, mind you, that will mean that it will be okay for Ruth Bader Ginsburg to retire. But for the most part, yeah, the next president, and barring that, they will hang on until grim death. If a Republican is elected, God forbid, then it will be okay for Kennedy to retire, or maybe Slappy to retire. Scalia will go out feet first. Roberts is young, and Alito is relatively young. So yeah. Alito and Roberts and Scalia ain't going anywhere. Kennedy might like to retire. Maybe Slappy would. But I doubt if Slappy would either, because once he's a former Supreme Court justice, he becomes absolutely irrelevant on the face of the entire planet. Okay, and he doesn't say much. He just sits around brooding and hating things and people and picking pubes off Coke cans or whatever. But as usual, it's a matter of trying to catch up or keep up over on the so-called liberal side of the court, which I think I have demonstrated fairly accurately isn't really all that liberal.
Oh, definitely.
I mean, on the Supreme Court side of things, Jim, liberality on the Supreme Court is defined solely within the province of a woman's right to choose. And I am not in any way diminishing the importance of that. It is crucially important. But liberality in terms of how we treat the money, liberality in terms of how we treat Wall Street, no, sorry. They're not going to be there for that.
Right, so if Bernie gets in, a win, let me think affirmatively, when Bernie gets in, they're going to fight him tooth and nail just because he's been alleged to have been a democratic socialist. Correct?
Well, it depends on who they are. I see no reason to expect the House of Representatives to be anything but the right-wing insurgency that it is. There is a chance of getting the Senate back.
Yeah.
But that's about as far as it goes, as far as I can tell.
Unless the whole great portion of the country has some sort of epiphany.
No, some great national epiphany won't even do the trick. We've had, two congressional elections in a row now? 14 and 12, maybe we've had three or four, where nationally, just pulling all the votes together, the Democrats got lots more votes in the House of Representatives than the Republicans did, but the Republicans maintained power because of the fact that the House is a matter of districting and gerrymandering. Add into that voter suppression and this latest thing to go before the court, namely this business of absolutely redefining the meaning of one man, one vote. I mean, this is how they are entrenching themselves. They know they're outnumbered. And white wing America views itself as being under siege already, Jim.
Right.
And that siege mentality is what leads to voter suppression, gerrymandering, redistricting, and the assault on the Voting Rights Act. And yes, this latest thing calling into question the idea of one man, one vote.
Well, speaking of that, I just checked yesterday about registering to vote. We got same day registration out here in Nevada.
Yeah.
You know? I looked it up on the internet. That's what it said. I said, cool, because I heard, oh, I guess we're one of the states that didn't get, has these weird rules for registering the vote. So, I mean, because I was checking, when is we don't have a primary, we have a caucus.
Right.
When's the caucus? And, you can same day registration, so you can still caucus. And that's actually pretty cool. The last time I caucused.
I've always wanted to participate in one, Jim. I always thought a caucus would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, well, mine was in 08, and it was like, it's just like under 100 people in my little group, and it was like a 45-45 tie between Hillary and Obama. And I was one of the 8 or 9 that was and I wanted to go with Kucinich. And they said, well, you need 15 votes for to count. So if you can talk over some people and get them to come over to you, come over to, the dark Kucinich side, what a great guy. I mean, I've never met him, but he just seemed probably.
No, he is. I have. He is.
I spoke to me, you know what I mean? But anyway, I looked at two groups of 45, and I was like, there's no way I could be able to get them, because it was hardcore Hillary and hardcore Obama, and there's no way of carrying away 5 or 6 people. So I just ended up going with Hillary. So that's probably the last time I was able to see that. It is pretty cool, the caucusing affair. I was surprised that they've seen their registration. But I might still be eligible because I voted. I probably still am. I'll have to check. Next thing I'll check out.
Yeah, you got to double check. Are you going to go somewhere and watch the debate Saturday?
I haven't decided yet. I'll have to see.
I would assume there's a sizable Bernie group in Vegas.
Oh, yeah. That sounds like a good idea. In fact, I'll do that. I'll check that out.
Oh, and by the way, you know that your local newspaper has just been bought, right?
My local what?
Newspaper.
Yeah, by my former employer.
Sheldon Adelson.
Sheldon.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw that on the internet.
Yeah, it was a big secret. The people at the Las Vegas Review Journal were told that the paper had been sold, but it was a big secret as to who it had been sold to. So the reporters at the Review Journal themselves had to start investigating to find out who did it. And it turns out that Sheldon Adelson gave his son-in-law some money to set up a dummy front corporation, which then turned around and bought the Review Journal.
Yeah. So much for freedom of the press, huh?
Well, it's dead in Vegas, that's for sure.
Yeah. Oh, also, did you see that your buddy got arrested, indicted?
Pharma Bro?
The what?
Pharma Bro? Shkreli?
Yeah,
it couldn't happen to a nicer guy.
Yeah. I saw the pictures of him on the internet. Yeah, he must have really screwed up. That couldn't happen to a nicer guy. All right. Well, I'll let you go, Bob.
All right, Jim. You have yourself a good night.
Thanks for brightening my life with the news of the impending doom of the American justice system.
Well, I'm a little goddamn ray of sunshine now, aren't I?
Yeah, that's the way you are, man. Between you and the lawyer, man.
It's just three. Well, taken together, it is 6 hours of sunshine and rain, sunshine, unicorns, and rainbows.
That's it, man. I'll check you later.
See you, Jim. Bye now. Our buddy Jim calling from Nevada-stan, where journalism is dead. Yeah. Salon reports Adelson all but lied about his involvement with purchasing the paper in an interview with CNN on Tuesday, saying he had no personal interest in the Review Journal, a statement that is only barely true in a technical sense. Adelson's family issued a statement saying it was committed to a journalism product that is second to none and first to even fewer. This should be taken, the writer at Salon notes, with a truckload of salt. I would say a freighter full of salt. The conflicts facing the Review Journal staff are almost too many to list. Adelson is a major player in the day-to-day business of Las Vegas, in the Republican Party, in the key swing state of Nevada as a whole. Pity the poor Review Journal reporters who have to find a way through that minefield with their dignity intact. Dignity? Dignity, hell, with their paycheck intact. Wrecked them, damn near killed them, you know? They are now tasked with covering the happenings in one of the most important electoral battlegrounds in the country, while the man who pays their salaries is doing everything he can to ensure that the election goes a certain way. And in light of the fact that the Review Journal had to do the investigative reporting to find out who had purchased it, I wouldn't give you a plugged nickel for the value of the jobs of anybody whose name appears on those bylines. Quality journalism product. My old Aunt Matilda's lumbago. Thanks, Jude, for sending that along. Steve writes from New York. Subject line, Shkreli. Isn't that fungus that grows under your toenails and they've got... Never mind. Best part, the perp walk. Yeah, yeah, that was kind of sweet. Yeah. Randy in PA says, I don't think that people are aware how big data, social media, and gerrymandering are making 90% of the U.S. House seats safe. Recently, I've been trying to get this issue to people's attention. People's social media posts are being analyzed by artificial intelligence and big data firms to literally gerrymander U.S. congressional districts around a lot of dwellings in an irregular geometrical shape. Some minority districts actually look like jagged barbells or scorpions. Apparently, it now takes 106 Democratic votes to balance the equivalent of 100 Republican votes. So what am I supposed to think of some aspiring candidate who's running for a House seat in order to change Washington? Oh, no, Randy. They're not kidding. Especially if it's a white winger who's going to change Washington. They're going to change Washington eventually. And they're going to change it by the time they're done, it may not even be the national capital anymore. The national capital may be Omaha. Okay? I'm not speaking specifically to Randy, and I'm not suggesting Randy doesn't understand or that the Horn Family Commune congregation doesn't understand. But I'm pretty sure this country as a whole does not understand. This is an insurgency. And insurgency doesn't just mean pissed off Arabic people who've been bombed and invaded by the United States. We can have them too. In point of fact, an insurgency is a product of a cold civil war and one that is getting warmer. Yeah. Okay, so I got this story here. You might find it interesting. It comes out of Washington State, which we all too often assume wrongly is somehow liberal. It isn't. There's a whole different Washington State out east of the mountains that is just a total right-wing hellhole. Might as well be Idaho. In many senses, is Idaho. See if I got the story here. I might get it if I could type. Yeah. Yeah, no, okay. Just one sec. Oh, there it is. Yeah. All right. So here it is. This is a story of a buried lead. And you'll see why in a moment. T-Bog, Tom Bagioni, over at Raw Story, who does tremendous work, has an account. Busted, feds arrest unhinged Fox News fan who spewed death threats against liberals and Obama. Yeah, it's just another day, right? Again, the story comes out of Washington State. The story itself was reported in the Sacramento Bee. 57-year-old man named Scott Anthony Orton of Puyallup, who, when inquired of by federal agents, said yes. His online handle is Josie Whales, W-H-A-L-E-S. And yes, he has made violent threats on the internet. When the authorities interviewed him, he said he was trying to wake people up, trying to paint a mental picture with words. I'm a wordsmith. That's what I do, wordsmithing. A mental picture with words. I'm a wordsmith. That's what I do. That's the quote. So most recently, he's been posting exhortations to murder, because First Amendment, because freedom. At least in this case, the guy's been arrested. But look what it took to get him arrested. He's been exhorting people to murder against the staff and the executives at a company called STEM Express. That company is a provider of blood and tissue products to medical researchers. It is no accident that STEM Express is targeted in those utterly fabricated, entirely bullshit videos from the Center for Medical Regurgitative Responsibility to Protect Them Babies from Getting Eaten Center or whatever. Center for Medical Progress. The videos have a direct link to Brother Deer out in Colorado Springs, who, of course, was not mentioned in the Repig-licking pageant the other night. It was all about Boston and San Bernardino and San Bernardino. No mention, because it would have been uncomfortable for Carly, probably. But anyway, the videos were the shout of fire in the crowded theater of the mind of Mr. Deer, and apparently inflamed this Orton, Scott Anthony Orton character of Puyallup. And where does he go to post his exhortation to murder? Well, he goes places where one can expect that they might be acted upon. To wit, Fox Nation. That's where he posted, "Kill STEM Express employees. I'll pay you for it." Someone needs to double tap the executive of STEM Express. She lives in, and gives the name of the place in California. "I think I'll take a little trip to name of place in California this weekend. I hear there's some good hunting down name of place in California way." The story goes out of the way to note that Fox News helped them identify Orton fully cooperating with federal investigators. Now, this guy has apparently has a long history of this sort of thing. He was caught threatening the life of Marilyn Mosby, the state's attorney in Baltimore. I'll pay $10,000 to the one who fires the shot that takes out Marilyn Mosby. Federal employees would be a lot more respectful if they knew that we knew where they live and where their kids go to school. Others may not realize it. You probably do. This is what an insurgency begins to look and sound like. 2 years ago, over at Reddit, they found Josie Wales posting, "Hey, Barack, ever see a skull explode? Hey, Barack, you should hang by your neck until your feet quit kicking." That was 2 years ago. But, you know, you wouldn't want to arrest this guy too quick or anything. After all, he's white. He's a white winger. And he just complained that he's being persecuted because he's just a wordsmith. Let's see. Here's a thread from Fox Nation from 2011. A post about Anthony Holder. "Nigger Holder, you are a dead man. You are a dead man walking. We got us a dead man walking here. Dead man walking." Now, I told you this was a buried lead story. Here's why it's a buried lead story. Now, I've just shared all of this with you, right? This is the final paragraph of T-Bog's post over at Raw Story. "Despite a request by federal authorities that Orton be held without bail, a federal magistrate judge ordered him set free on an unsecured appearance bond. He is expected to appear in a Sacramento courtroom on December 29th. That's 12 days. 11 and change. Right? 11 days and 6 hours. That's right. A man who has threatened the life of the President of the United States, who has said he should be hanged by the neck till his feet quit kicking, who has declared, who has used a vile racial epithet against the Attorney General of the United States and called him a dead man walking, who has online solicited the murder of people whose company name appears in a bullshit video designed specifically for the purpose of inciting said violence. He didn't even have to post a penny of bond. Not a penny. Nothing. He just signed his name on a piece of paper and said that he promised he would be good and law-abiding. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think I'm going to go down there. I hear there's some good hunting down there. Yeah. Not a penny. Jesus Christ. People who get busted for misdemeanors have to pay some kind of bond. Most usually. This man suggested that the President of the United States should be murdered. And a federal magistrate, said, "Yeah, well, here, sign your name right here. Yeah, go free. Yeah, go free. Now, you be good now." And that's why I say this story is a buried lead. Man soliciting murder, set free on own recognizance. How's that work? Now does it see? Now do you see why it's a buried lead? On the other hand, if this was some liberal suggesting that I'm not even going to speculate. But I-O-K-I-Y-A-R. It's okay if you're a Republican. Yeah. Yeah, not to worry, not to worry. I mean, he was just typing stuff on the interweb tubes. Yes, Marty, that particular place was that particular place. I ain't scared of no Syrians. Hell, I ain't scared of ISIS. If I was wandering around along the Turkish-Syrian border, I'd be worried about ISIS. But I'm not, so I'm not. But if you've got the stomach for it, and if you don't, I do not blame you. Go wandering around the comments section of a place like Fox Nation sometime. You will find stunning expressions of hatred. Not that you need that in your life. But you'll begin to see the somewhere between a simmer and a slow-rolling boil that exists in this country of people just yearning for full-scale, all-out, all-consuming violence to consume this country. There was a reference made earlier in the program to this clown in Texas. He's Texas Agriculture Commissioner Sid Miller. And Sid apparently got himself a belly full of Shiner Bock or a belly full of Lone Star or some such. And got on his Facebook last night, and he wrote, "If one more person says happy holidays to me, I just might slap them. Either tell me Merry Christmas or just don't say anything." Can we tell you to go? No. The message included a photo of a cowboy riding a bull in front of a sign that said, "We will never take Christ out of Christmas." And, of course, nothing says Christmas like a cowboy tormenting a bull. Because you have to do some pretty awful things to that. That cinch strap on that bull is not something the bull enjoys. Here's the fun part. By the time this morning rolled around, there were 7,000 likes on "If one more person says happy holidays to me, I just might slap them. Either tell me Merry Christmas or just don't say anything." Because see, in Sid Miller's world, you don't have a right to consider Hanukkah or Kwanzaa or, you know, fucking New Year's. You can't do it. Nope. God damn it, you got to say Merry Christmas or Sid Miller just might slap you. These hypersensitive babies. But these hypersensitive babies also have itchy trigger fingers and entire houses chock full of firearms. The Houston Chronicle noted that Sid Miller has done similar things in the past. He's compared Syrian refugees to rattlesnakes. He's called for nuclear weapons to be used against the Muslim world. And he's a big fan of duck doofus Phil Robertson. Phil Robertson has every right to express his personal opinions about his Christian faith and against the homosexual lifestyle. For a television network to cater to and then run scared of the radical gay community is a shame and a disgrace. It demonstrates just what the liberal left agenda is going to do to our country. Rot it from the inside out by killing off American values like hating homosexuals. I added the like hating homosexuals part myself, and it seems self-explanatory, but sometimes I don't like to make those assumptions. Going back to Mr. Orton out in Puyallup, Ron, in the perhaps by now somewhat chilly north, says, coming through loud and clear in my little Warren. I figure that crazy fucker's entirely free to go out and buy a gun between now and his court date. Well, damn straight, because, you know, Merca. Yeah, sure, Ron. I mean, because just like D.C. versus Heller says, the right to own guns is a personal right. Meanwhile, Gerald says, if Sid Miller slapped me, could I stand my ground on his ass and use my freedom protector on him? I would say yes. I would say that the law in Texas probably says yes, too. But it might be a little bit of a dicier question, seeing as how Sid Miller is white. Now, if Sid Miller was black, there ain't a jury in Texas would touch you. Because freedom. Because thugs. Right? Yeah. What else? Where else? I remember, what was it, Tuesday? Carol shared with us the story of the Keystone cops who invaded the wrong home, shot the guy's dog, shot the guy, and then shot each other. Well, via the Free Thought Project, here's another one. It comes out of Cherokee County, Kansas. Sorry, Diane. It was Tuesday when Cherokee County Sheriff David Groves and a whole bunch of his deputies invaded the home of a single mother and her four kids. Sheriff Groves says police were looking for Doug Alexius, a suspect wanted on a misdemeanor count of assaulting a law enforcement officer and some other drug-related charge. So when they entered the home of the single mom and her four kids, they used their highfalutin, and it probably goes ping, infrared camera, and using their infrared camera, they saw that Mr. Alexius was hiding in the attic. This is where it gets fun. Once their infrared camera had shown them, and frankly, they would have been better off borrowing my busted magic eight ball that always says answer hazy, ask again later. But once it had showed them that David Alexius was up hiding in the attic, They'd stormed into the house right before Christmas. They all stormed back out of the house right before Christmas and engaged in a standoff. I don't have to tell you that David Alexius was not in the attic, do I? I don't have to tell you that they probably didn't know how to use their highfalutin infrared stormtrooper gizmo, do I? Well, okay, I'll tell you, they didn't, and he wasn't. But they didn't know that because the machine had gone ping. So after 20 hours, the heroic sheriff's deputies said, screw it, and they called for backup. And that's when the SWAT truck that I'm sure they had gotten through a community policing grant of excess equipment from the Iraq War, the SWAT truck with a big old battering ram on it showed up and proceeded to poke holes in the house and tear the house all to hell. This was how they were going to drive the fugitive David Alexius, who was not in the house, out of the house. But he kept not coming out. So then the deputies began tearing apart the couches and the beds, shattering the lamps, tearing up clothing, destroying the toys. And they even went so far as to yank the family Christmas tree through a window and tore it to tiny bits. According to the Free Thought Project, Sheriff Grove is unapologetic. Did I mention that Mama told him at the very beginning David Alexius wasn't there? Because she did. But still, the sheriff said, it appeared using that tool that there was somebody in the attic. As it turns out, now we know that was incorrect. But nonetheless, that was the information we were operating under at the time. What did I tell you about USB Leon and good faith? They're going to get away with this. You know that, right? Some may suggest you just rush in and we could have cleared that house in a matter of minutes, but if there was a suspect in there and would have shot one of our officers or something else happened, they were armored, by the way, and he was able to breach the perimeter and jeopardize the safety of the residents nearby, that's not a risk I'm willing to take. So, Mama ain't got a home. Four kids ain't got a home. And the sheriff of Cherokee County, Kansas, ain't got a care in the world. Like I said, I'm a little ray of sunshine. And that's it for Thorn in the Side Thursday. Thanks for joining. Enjoy the Palmans. And we'll be back for Friday on the Front Porch tomorrow evening. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.